Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Gail Seiler, together with Greta Anderson. Hi, Greta.
Hi, Gail. Quite a voice you got today.
Yeah, I hope our listeners can bear with me with my gargly voice, but we'll make do.
Well, I hope it doesn't hurt.
No. Hurt the listener.
Although it was Thanksgiving last week, a holiday that is usually joyful, there are also events that sparked conversations and reactions about justice and diversity and inequality in this country. And this reminds us of how challenging it can be to talk about these kinds of things in thoughtful ways, especially with family and people who use perhaps different media than we do. Young people in particular need opportunities for these kinds of discussions, and much of the responsibility for that falls on our schools and our teachers.
In that respect, our show today is very timely. We're going to be talking about engaging young people in examining, understanding, and responding to complex issues related to justice and prejudice in society.
We have three guests with us. Jeremy Nesoff is a teacher, and he is now with Facing History in Ourselves, an organization that we'll be spotlighting today. It works with teachers around preparing students who practice civility and preserve human rights. Jeremy was in Ames this week to work with teachers at Ames High School and to participate in a number of other events. Chad Smolik is also with us. Chad is a social studies teacher at Ames High School and has played a big role in getting local teachers involved in the Facing History initiative. Finally, we are joined by Katie Bruna, an associate professor in the School of Education at ISU. Katie has coordinated bringing Facing History to Ames.
Facing History in Ourselves started as a single history course, and it's grown to become an international organization. According to their website, the mission of Facing History and Ourselves is to engage students of diverse backgrounds in an examination of racism and prejudice in order to promote the development of a more humane and informed citizenry. By studying historical events and people's responses to them, Facing History and Ourselves aims to help people, especially young people, make connections between history and the moral choices they confront in their lives. Recently, Facing History and Ourselves has come to Ames. There's been a growing collaboration between this organization, the School of Education at ISU, and Ames High School. And our guests are here to talk about this project, and we're very grateful to them for being here with us. They're going to tell us about what's going on and why they've each gotten involved in it. Jeremy, you were here this past June, and you did a 3-day Facing History workshop with teachers from Ames. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So first of all, it's really nice to be back in Ames and to be here with Chad and Katie and you guys. I think the goal of the workshop that we did in June before last summer was to teach the teachers at Ames, and we had about 15 staff members from Ames High School there, so it was really quite remarkable. There was a great range of people and of experience in the group. We had very experienced veteran educators and teachers in their first year, as well as student teachers from Iowa State University School of Ed and student teachers as well. So really quite a remarkable gathering that really was a testament to Chad and his colleagues at Ames High School, Joel Sullivan, the department head, and Katie, and all the work building relationships over the years to get everybody there. So the workshop focused on our core case study at Facing History and Ourselves. The organization began with a case study called Holocaust and Human Behavior that looks at the history of the Holocaust and gets students involved into an investigation of our behavior as human beings in history. Facing History asked students to really look at the choices that people make in the context of our historical case studies. So this 3-day workshop was training teachers in our method, our framework, our pedagogy, introducing them to our resources.
So a lot of schools already have, a lot of teachers have Holocaust units, and, you know, all the way down to middle school, possibly even elementary school. Can you explain really what makes this Holocaust unit different from other Holocaust units that might be taught?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I believe really makes it different is the Facing History in Ourselves framework, the journey that we ask teachers to take their students on. It begins with a look at identity and asking students to think about themselves, which is very developmentally appropriate for anyone who remembers what it's like to be a teenager or has a teenager or works with teenagers currently. We're meeting students where they are, and they're really trying to figure out their place in the world, who they are, what they want to dress like today, what groups they want to be a part of. And that's where we start, and we get them to think about what self-identity means, what group identity means, and then the momentum of looking at those two concepts of where we are in this world and who we are and what our ideals and beliefs are leads you to think about how we interact with each other, because we do not live by ourselves. We live in society interacting with people, and we really want students to think about those group dynamics and identity. So how identity affects our choices, how identity affects our worldview, and how it can move beyond an individual to a community or a nation, how a nation's identity will affect its choices and the consequences of those choices. So we look at those dynamics of identity and we and they and establish them before we enter our case study. So I think that's a major difference from how it may happen in other places. And the other benefit of that is that we're establishing a positive classroom environment. We're getting teachers to really know their students, their students to get to know the teachers, to really model how you can have these really difficult discussions in a safe and effective and also rigorous way. And so that's how we feel that you can move into a time and place in history, some really difficult things to look at happen, whether it's genocide like the Holocaust or in the civil rights movement, a crisis in a community like in Little Rock, Arkansas, and the Little Rock Nine. And that momentum continues because after looking at something like that, students want to know what happens next. And the Facing History journey continues into issues of memory, judgment, and legacy, and thinking about how we memorialize or how we heal, how a society can continue to face the issues that happen in something like genocide and seek justice while moving forward, hopefully. And the whole journey culminates with this idea of choosing to participate. And so we're constantly asking students, as I mentioned before, to think about the choices that people made in history in order to have the critical thinking skills to better think about their own choices and their own place in the world. So the journey really culminates asking them to think about their own civic engagement. And that's the dynamic between Facing History and ourselves.
There's a kind of an analogical perspective that they look at history through the lens of themselves.
I would also say analytical, though, because we the dates matter, the numbers matter, the geography matters, but at the same time, we know that students who are not engaged, who do not care about those dates, those numbers, that geography, it's not going to resonate, and they're not going to achieve to the high levels that we want them to. So in order to intellectually engage students, we know that we also need to engage their emotions, that we need to engage them in moral and ethical dilemmas. And, we may often get the type of question that, for example, why will a student in an urban school district in, fill in the blank city or in Ames, Iowa, why are they going to care about the history of the Holocaust or the history of the civil rights movement? And today, looking at the story of Elizabeth Eckford, one of the Little Rock Nine, who was a 15-year-old teenager walking to school and was harassed by a mob, you can see the entry points that a teenager would be able to relate to her story, that we've all had a first day of school experience and can relate to what she may have been thinking that morning as she was just preparing to go to school in her eyes and not necessarily to make history.
So it sounds also like other Holocaust units maybe provide materials for teachers to engage in the content, in the subject matter. But I think having those conversations and helping teachers understand how to set up a classroom where you can have those conversations is, from what I know of Facing Histories, that's a key part that it's able to prepare teachers to not just touch on these subjects superficially, but to feel like they're ready to delve into them in ways that are not necessarily created by other curricula.
I would just say absolutely. And, a teacher's own sense of their efficacy, their effectiveness is key to what they're willing to do, what they're willing to address in a classroom, and how effective they are. So certainly Facing History's goal is to support teachers to be more effective in the classroom with these really hard conversations, whether it's talking about a current event like Ferguson, the murder in Ferguson, or if it talking about something like the Holocaust, that teachers need to feel that they know how to enter those conversations, that they have the resources and support to do it effectively.
Well, what do you tell them about how to make a classroom safe?
So for us, it is really about establishing class norms, class rules, and modeling that for students. So we have different teaching strategies. We have one that's called Listen to Learn, Learn to Listen, that will literally go through for teachers and then teachers for their students steps that maybe begin with journaling. So on any given topic, to have students first journal about the topic individually, to have some think time before you begin speaking, then begin talking about in small groups before you move to the bigger group. But even in those small groups, that it's not a debate, that we're going to take turns just hearing people's thoughts and getting them out there. So it really is about that hard work from day one. I know when I was a teacher, one of the axioms I was given in my first year was don't smile till Christmas. Otherwise, they'll eat you alive sort of thing. And, I think we really want to change that around. It's about make connections with your students from day one. Let them see you as a real human being. While you maintain your role and your authority as a teacher, you can still establish a classroom, a democratic classroom, where everybody's voice has the potential to be heard in a safe way.
So what was going on this week?
This week there was a lot going on, and it started on Tuesday when I visited two classes at Iowa School of Education. One was a social foundations course, and the other was a literature foundations course. And in the social foundations course, we looked at the history I mentioned previously of the Little Rock Nine in Little Rock, Arkansas, which is a unit that Facing History has written called Choices in Little Rock that looks at the history. And we're really excited that one of the Little Rock Nine, Dr. Terrence Roberts had called in to a class, social foundations class at Iowa State University School of Education, and we're really honored to have one of the Little Rock Nine call in virtually on Adobe Connect and be able to speak to that class and have them interact with him and ask questions about his story and his experiences. He himself is an educator and a psychologist, so he's uniquely positioned to be able to talk about, obviously, the history that he experienced firsthand, but also why he is engaged in this work, why he volunteered for Facing History, why he's on Facing History and Ourselves board and flies around the country and virtually goes around the country speaking to people that we work with. And so that was a real honor.
So you moved on from the Holocaust to the civil rights movement.
Facing History has different case studies. So one of our challenges as an organization is that we're not all history all the time to speak to everybody's needs, that we've gone in real depth into certain case studies. And those are examples of Holocaust Human Behavior, Choices in Little Rock. And we're really excited this year that we're releasing two new resources, one on the Reconstruction Era and the Fragility of Democracy, which will be printed in February, which is just an amazing resource that are aligned with Common Core state standards and just chock full of primary source material that students can really dig into. And we're also releasing a guide about To Kill a Mockingbird called Teaching Mockingbird for literature teachers that also uses the Facing History framework to investigate that novel.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're talking about Facing History and Ourselves, a program that the Iowa State School of Education has brought to Ames for the benefit of Ames teachers as well as the students in their program.
So let's go to Chad now. Chad, you've kind of been the point person, I understand, at the high school for coordinating the teachers, and you've already started using some of the Facing History materials and approaches that you learned this summer. Can you tell us about that, what you've been doing?
Well, it was a really interesting way we got together through Katie, kind of just brainstorming a little bit and asking each other what we do and kind of then going from there and going, well, she asked, have you ever heard of Facing History? And I go, well, yeah, in my courses I teach, I'm always looking for new resources, and I'd come across them before, but never the full kind of package. And from there we kind of got into, well, there might be this opportunity, and should we bring them in? And it worked out, and so to see it in action with others, then that got us at the school really thinking about, well, how can this change the way we present history and issues and choices. And I kind of am not saying how I'm using it because I haven't yet been able to really use it like we want. We're still in implementing it through the freshman and sophomore world studies and history classes. And I teach juniors and seniors. So the idea is we want them to experience and go through this framework, this sequence that we think, where then by the time they get to junior and senior levels, I can push them a little more. You know, really, we still do the journaling prompt, so I'm using that. We're talking, I think it's called the big paper, where they just write their thoughts down, you read, you know, you can start that in those early years because I don't think they know quite how to dialogue. They need that, I guess, practice first. So that by the time they're juniors and seniors, they know what it takes to create and maintain a respectful and safe classroom. For me, what Face in History brings is not only the resources, but I'm really just excited to use their sequence of identity and then how that works into how you fit into the past, but also how you create the future without knowing it. Like you said, those case studies show there's people making all sorts of decisions that had no idea they were going to make history. And next thing you know, there they are looking back. So we're trying to get students to do that kind of really critical thinking. And it's not easy, and it takes time.
Yeah, so it's interesting to hear that you're not approaching it just as single teachers doing it. You're really trying to build the whole program around it in that subject area in particular.
Yes, it was kind of quite a feat at first trying to think about, well, who would be interested in these topics? And it was like, well, social studies should be. And fortunately, I work with some amazing colleagues who are right on board. We're always trying to improve, and this is one of those ways. But when I kind of put out some feelers, and all of a sudden we were going, well, we'd always wanted to integrate courses. I mean, obviously there's connections to writing and reading and historical information, but then also historical fiction, and I mean, all the things that the English department we know would be interested in. And
so integrate disciplines.
Yes. And then all of a sudden I got a science teacher that shows up and says, I think this is important too. And because all of a sudden you realize, oh, in science, there are things that are discovered or, you know, relatable into civic action just as much as any civil rights issue.
Ethical decision
yes,
making.
Yes, ethical decision making. And then we even had the World Languages Department kind of hop on, and counselors were interested. I mean, we had quite a group. So it shows just how integrated we want to be but have not really been able to. This is a big picture idea facing history in ourselves. So it really has been helpful to have that in a way, that architecture to kind of put it together. And in the past, we tried, but, you know, it'd kind of fall apart. You could never, you know, what ties it together? And we believe that now, especially after our workshop, that the sequence that Facing History provides is, I think, will be one of those keys.
Yeah. Before we get any further, I have a burning question. What is a big paper?
Oh, so there's basically a huge post-it note or any big size paper. So it's literally big paper. And you either are presented with images or you read perhaps from a diary or some sort of primary resource usually. But it can be anything. The kids observe it. And then on the big piece of paper that's around it, you write down your thoughts. And then you have different groups, and then you kind of rotate around observing what others wrote. You can respond to it. And so there's no verbal confrontation, but yet people are able to express what they are feeling or thinking about when they see it. And then you can start to discuss that as a larger group.
And so, yeah, so it's a teaching strategy, and that's one of the strategies that we model in our professional development. And, you know, I think what Chad was saying was so important, that the workshop in June, the professional development training in June, was about laying a foundation for further work and further collaboration with the staff at Ames. And since then, we've had four teachers who have just completed, I think, last week or so, an online course that we also offer on Choices in Little Rock. So looking at that unit about the Little Rock Nine, and that's what they'll be implementing. So, you know, one of the challenges for Facing History is proving our impact. And we have had a control blind study that did prove a statistically significant impact on both students' and teachers' efficacy in several important realms of civic engagement and social emotional learning when a teacher implements our full program, our full 4 to 6 week framework and journey. However, I know for a fact from my own experience and from trainings that, you know, as Chad has mentioned, he hasn't implemented a full 4 to 6 week or longer Facing History unit, but he's taken what spoke to him as a teacher, strategies and content pieces, and what's helping him reach his goals in his class, and that we have a very significant impact that we can't exactly demonstrate in a control blind study for teachers like that who are, you know, who are using what speaks to them.
You mentioned this statistical data that proves the impact. Can you provide anecdotal evidence of how this works in the classroom and how it changes individuals and groups?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just mentioning, I think to Katie, visiting a classroom in Boston, you know, an urban classroom in Boston with a visitor who wanted to see Facing History in action. And as we were leaving the classroom, he said to me, that wasn't a Facing History classroom. I didn't see it anywhere. And, you know, it's one of our challenges because we do not require teachers to identify themselves as Facing History teachers or, you know, require them to put, you know, our posters up in the room and things like that. And in this classroom, up on the walls were literally big paper examples of, from the teaching strategy that Chad was speaking to. There were students in small groups investigating primary sources and analyzing them in a jigsaw activity who are then becoming quote-unquote experts on the one document that their small group was given that was different from the other groups. And then she reconstituted the groups so that they each had one quote-unquote expert from all the other small groups who then went ahead and taught. So, you know, they would say, in my group, we read this document. Here's what we thought were the most important takeaways from it. And in this new group, every student would share their document from their original group. And that was, both of those activities were activities that she learned in a Facing History in Ourselves workshop. So the anecdotal evidence is something that I see all the time. Probably most important to me is that I've had time and time again feedback from teachers who will say that it's something that's re-energized them and rededicated them to teaching after being in our workshops. And to me, in a profession that can be really beaten down quite a lot, whether it's from how busy teachers are and how many much demands they have on them in a day-to-day or what they're hearing in, you know, national news and dialogue, to have a place that they could go where they feel respected as professionals, as creative adult learners is really important to them and something that really feeds them in their practice and I believe has a really big impact on students eventually.
And I certainly have loads of anecdotal evidence that it's powerful. you know, as since they've already taken history classes and my focus is on world issues later on, like I said, for their junior and senior year and sociology, of course, lots of topics come up that are related or able to be connected into Facing History. Even though none of my juniors and seniors have been in this program, if we want to call it that, or framework, I'd rather call it, I guess. After you've used the language enough, after they are now able to critically think, it doesn't really matter what I present to them or what kind of issue comes up in the news. Now, I'm not even prompting it, and they're talking about being an upstander, or how is that individual, when that was going on, a bystander, what perhaps could have been done. They're recognizing their place in these events, because you never know, sometime you might be that person in one of these events, and what will you do? You don't know, but at least you've thought about it before. So that just happened today. I had students talking about being an upstander. Mm. Yeah, we were talking about cyberbullying, and very applicable.
I have not heard that term before. I've heard bystander in relation to bullying quite a bit. I think that that language has come to be the way people talk about that, the bystander effect and so forth. But upstander, standing up for.
Yes. As a department, we've been trying to change our framework for how and what we believe to be kind of the takeaways from, you know, studying history. Obviously, we still have to address the core, the topics, but, you know, that place, your place, and that's what makes kids want to learn these things, is they want to put themselves, I think, as being something that isn't insignificant, that their choices matter. And that's how I think it relates also to democracy and our pluralism. That is kind of the topic of our panel the other day. The energy that you spoke of, we're seeing it, we're feeling it again, and it carries into the classroom. I know I'm a different teacher this year because of this, and I've been teaching for 15 years, and I know it's helped. So that's the language we want, the idea of these kids recognizing choices matter, and so they're going to have to make them.
So I can see that is your motivation for why you wanted to get involved in this from the beginning. Because as a teacher, I'm sure it's a lot of extra work for you and for all of the others.
It's a lot of work.
But you see the payoff.
It's a payoff, though. And it's worth it then. We knew it was going to be a lot of work. And at first you go, oh, it's just something else, you know, that comes and goes. Yeah. Like a lot of stuff in education seems to do. But it's been really important for us as a faculty so far, and it's gotten a conversation going that we've tried to have, but like I said earlier, this is something that seems to be that glue that's really holding us together to be an integrated school, a facing history school.
A facing history school, yeah. Let's bring in our third guest, Katie Bruna, professor at ISU in the School of Education, who both of you have mentioned is kind of the person who brought the two of you together and got this idea rolling so that Ames High could take this on and become a facing history school. Katie, how did you get interested in this, and why did you think it was so important to bring this forward as a possibility in Ames?
Well, there's an interesting story behind Facing History and ourselves at Iowa State and Ames High, and it has to do with an Ames connection. So we have a donor whose father was an ISU professor. She herself attended ISU as an undergrad, and in fact, she attended Ames High. And in her life journey, she had the opportunity to experience Facing History herself and was really touched by its transformative power at a time when her children were experiencing the world, and she was really thinking about the kinds of choices that they were going to have to be making in the world that they were living in. And she wanted to spread that transformative power to others, and thought of undergraduate education at ISU and particularly teacher education at ISU as being a vehicle to spread that transformative message.
That's really interesting. I mean, that's beautiful, because we know how difficult the choices are, and we can look back at our own lives and say, oh, I made wrong choices here and there, but you cannot teach your children the right choice, because we are a part of history, a moving stream that we look forward, and you can't even imagine the kinds of choices that your children will have to make, but you can teach them how to make a thoughtful decision.
And I think that's what's appealing to me then as a multicultural teacher educator, when then this opportunity to mobilize the energy of this donor around Facing History and move it into ideally our School of Ed teacher preparation program and in relationship with work that we could be doing in local schools like Ames High, what appealed to me about Facing History in Ourselves is precisely the fact that it wasn't trying to give us easy answers to complicated issues in our lives, in our histories, but it was giving us tools to develop dispositions for thinking about ourselves in relationship to others, communities, and our histories. And that felt more true to the way that I had learned to think about my students' needs in the classroom, that that simple answers were harder for them than me releasing some control over right or wrong answers and providing opportunity to explore the context around which we need to do some thinking. And so I think it resonated with what I'd learned in my own practice about the needs of the students that I work with, which will then be the teachers working in schools like Ames High, for example.
Katie, could you share the name of the donor?
Sure. The donor is Deborah Engel.
And I think, Greta, I think that's, you know, just a really important point, because what we try to model at Facing History and give teachers resources to do is, it's not about lecturing students, you know, you must be an upstander in this situation or you must step in and do this. It's about having them think about the choices in history in order to develop their own critical thinking skills so that they can, as Chad and Katie have spoken about, make their own choices and in fully understanding the context of those choices and the consequences. So when we use a word like upstander, when we look at upstanders in history, it's not to say this is what you need to do. It's to say, you know, what do you think about this person's choice and what they did? And we also really try not to make anything simple, but to really make it complicated and show how, you know, you can be an upstander and a perpetrator in the same moment in history. We want students to think about, can you even be a bystander? Is there such a thing? You know, when you're standing aside doing nothing, you're actually doing something and making a choice about participating.
Well, this is a fascinating discussion. We'll come back with more after the break and maybe see how it applies to some of the events in our lives today.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. Of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry,
So just look at them and sigh and know they love you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're talking about teaching your children and having your children maybe teach you in this discussion of Facing History and Ourselves, an organization that presents a curriculum of dialogue and open-mindedness, a safe classroom, and thinking before you speak. Jeremy Nessoff is from the organization here and has been visiting all week, working with teachers and teachers in training at the Iowa State School of Education. We have Chad Smolak, a social studies teacher at the Ames High School, and who helped galvanize the folks over there to join this curriculum and create a integrated school based on these principles. And we have Katie Bruna, a professor in the School of Education at ISU, who's put these two guys together and a lot of other students as well. Let's open this up and talk a little more broadly about the goals of Facing History in Ourselves. I was thinking as you were speaking that, you know, being open-minded to all sides, you have to listen to perhaps and honor opinions and ideas that are difficult for some teachers who might, you know, have a preconceived notion themselves of what is right and good in society. Have you encountered any of that?
Well, I believe that, you know, all teachers are going to bring their own personal beliefs and experiences to their profession and to their practice. And I think the most important thing is for teachers to be reflective and to really think about who their students are in front of them, where they come from, to get to know each other as much as possible. So for Facing History, it is not about a political agenda. It is not about lecturing students to act in any given way. And for anybody who has teenagers in your home, you know how effective the lecturing is. And for us, it really is about thinking about how we can get students engaged in their own critical thinking about their own choices and their own place in the world, so that when they are presented with choices, they make the choice that's best for them. So when we talk about being an upstander, or we talk about not being a bystander and bullying, for example, it's not about you must always jump in and stop, you know, a fight or this, because you can't tell a student what the situation that they're in is. They need to be able to look around and make a decision. I think we can always say, here are your choices. We would hope that you would intervene. We would hope that you would go get help. We would hope that you do something that allows you to stand up for your beliefs and your ideals. And in order to do that, students need to be given the space to think about what those ideals and beliefs are so that they can take a stand for them one day.
So let's just apply some of this language to a situation such as what we've seen in Ferguson. What kind of conversation would you have with children, students in a classroom about that situation?
Well, you know, I think the most important thing is that you've established a safe environment in your classroom where you can have those types of conversations. Sometimes we think that if, as you know, teachers prepare their lesson plans carefully, that you won't go off on tangents into those current events. And I think for us, those aren't tangents. Those are very real, important things to discuss, and that if you've created a classroom where students feel safe in voicing their opinions, then that our classroom walls can't stop the real world from happening or affecting what happens in your classroom. I think it's really important for students to look at language, to look at history. You know, you can't understand what happened in Ferguson without an understanding of United States history. There's just absolutely no way. You know, I think I might have used the word murder. I think some people would very strongly disagree with characterizing it that way. And that's exactly the type of conversation that you could have with students. You know, why would someone be offended if you used the word murder? Or why would someone be offended if you use the word killed in this situation?
Well, actually, earlier this week on that same topic, it came up in government class. And so you can take these current events that can lead you into the history of the relationship between groups and individuals in groups and how they act. And it can just go in any number of ways, but what Facing History allows And especially, like I said, the reason we're trying to implement it at the younger students' grades, by the time they get to that senior government class, which is required, they're able to handle and understand the behavioral expectations no matter which classroom they're in at Ames High. And you can talk about these things and hopefully feel safe about doing that and having those conversations about whether this was an act of government violence, one of the only authorities that has the legitimate use of violence against its people. And there's tons of historical examples of that. And so you get to talk about those things. Or you go the other route, well, was this justified? Is it some other condition that created this event or the decisions that that officer made and the decisions the person that's killed has made? And so you do. It's tough. It's exhausting. The kids, though, really can start to put themselves in the place of each of those individuals, though. And that's the critical thinking skills that you have to develop earlier. You know, it just doesn't happen. And so that's why we find this program, this framework for thinking, just I think it'll be invaluable because we were wanting to do it anyway, but now we want to be able to share it across curriculums. And because otherwise the students are just going from class to class and there's not that, that's not life, you know. When you graduate as a senior and you've just explored all these events in government, but then it just disappears because you went to PE next, you know. That's not real life. And so we got to be able to carry that through in all their life, to always be able to think about the situation, their place in it, and maybe very quickly think about history is the attempt.
Jeremy, you mentioned the measures that were looked at in terms of the efficacy of the program, in terms of social engagement or civic engagement. What sorts of measures were those? What did you find that students were doing?
The measures really focused on civic engagement and social emotional learning. So really a lot of what Chad was just speaking about, which was really great, multiple perspectives that Chad was talking about are really key. So the ability and with our teaching Mockingbird, our guide on To Kill a Mockingbird, that's coming out, the famous line of being able to walk in someone else's shoes. You never really understand someone and you can, until you can walk around in their shoes, is an example of that. So we're really talking about the social emotional capabilities to have empathy, to be able to see what someone else might have seen, whether in history or not. And it, what one thing that's really effective about our approach is that it's safer to study even something as traumatic as genocide or violence in a community like Little Rock, Arkansas, or Boston with desegregation that happened in 1974 and busing. It's safer to look at something that's removed from you and be able to discuss those really tough issues of identity, of race, of class, of gender, and have those difficult conversations about something in history and the choices that individuals and communities made in history. It builds the skills, as Chad was talking about, to then go and look at yourself and look at your own community. And when you jump right into that initially, people can become defensive, understandably, and it can be harder to do that. So the historical case study method is a really effective way to build on the skills that students need to be able to analyze history and themselves.
That's an important point, I think. I think too often we as adults, we do jump right into the conflict that's going on right in front of us. With I want to say that maybe adults could use this training as well.
Well, you know, I think there's a real aspect to that that we try to honor in our trainings is that, you know, teachers have their own professional development needs and their own needs as adult learners to push people as adults and not just as professionals, but to wear both of those hats and to have their own learning and engagement. And if I could also just say, I think the beyond the social emotional learning aspects that the studies proved, when you're engaged in your work as a student, you succeed more, you achieve to higher levels. And the studies definitely showed that in Facing History classroom, students were more motivated, were more engaged, and that their academic competencies grew. When students feel disengaged, do not feel that the curriculum is relevant to them in any way, that certainly has been proven to contribute to the dropout rate. And when you have places where they're valued as individuals, where they have relationships with adults, where they're doing work that's important to them, that's something that can be mitigated.
And that's so wonderful to hear that that is happening right here in Ames High School. And a whole generation of Ames students are growing up to be adults with this training. We're talking about Facing History in Ourselves, a program that the Iowa State School of Education has brought to Ames for the benefit of Ames teachers as well as the students in their program. Where are you based out of, Facing History in Ourselves?
Our headquarters is in Brookline, Massachusetts, in Boston, and we have 7 offices around the country as well as offices in England and Toronto.
And I hear that your group has done presentations abroad and all over the country, like you say. Where have you been and what have you seen in different places?
Well, I've been fortunate to be able to be working in a variety of places, from Boston to New York City to Miami. We're working on implementing our Choices in Little Rock and Reconstruction units in Miami this year, which is maybe the 3rd largest school district in the country. It's up there in the top 5. So we really work in a broad range of places, and we have districts that are implementing it district-wide, including Boston, Chicago, Miami, so very large school districts that have written our units into their requirements for their districts.
We hear so much about the burdens on schools to teach students to the test, to have them pass a particular curriculum so that they'll get funding, and how does the program fit into such a tight system of learn and regurgitate?
it's certainly a challenge. There's no doubt about it. However, we've been successful as an organization for 36 years, and as Chad alluded to, that means you've seen in that time a lot come and go. The Common Core state standards are certainly something that teachers have to navigate. So for Facing History, it's always about meeting teachers where they are in their real classrooms with their real needs. And so certainly the Common Core or specific states like Iowa and their specific standards are meeting teachers in their real needs. And an example of how we do that is material that we've created to help teachers do argumentative writing assessments. And for those of us who may remember our 5-paragraph persuasive essays from school, argumentative writing is a sort of a progression, is a next step beyond that, where students are really asked to not just put out an opinion and some supporting facts, but to really marshal evidence, to use text, to call evidence in order to construct an argument. So for Facing History, we've addressed the shifts in practice that are required in the Common Core, things like using evidence from text, using academic vocabulary. The Common Core is privileging those and is really asking teachers to focus on those skills even more. So for us, we've created argumentative writing tasks that use our material. So for example, for Choices in Little Rock, which looks at the history of the Little Rock Nine, who attempted to desegregate Central High School in 1957. One of the writing prompts we've created is, who has the power to change the world? And this is what we were looking at the School of Ed today with the students there. And on the surface, that seems like maybe a simple question. You know, you could say, well, you know, a great leader has the power. You could say the Supreme Court. But in order for a student to understand all the possibilities that they have to support, refute, or modify that statement, they need to understand the structure of our government, which they'll be looking at in Chad's class. They need to be able to make an argument for who's more important to a movement, for example, the leader or the people in the movement. So they really need to wrestle with these big ideas and then go look at the evidence and see what they care enough about to form a hypothesis and construct an argumentative essay to take a stand.
As a former composition teacher, it always kind of irked me that my job was to teach children how to argue, that it's actually the word argument that we used for writing rather than to reflect or consider, but it sounds like you, as it fits into your curriculum, there's really a good way to make an argument work in a constructive way.
Yeah, you know, and I think it as I said, it's something that, for example, the Common Core State Standards really privileges, really focuses on. And so what they're saying is to be college and career ready, students need to be able to wrestle with complex nonfiction texts in a way and be able to take that information to construct an argument. What we're saying is that what better way to do that than with primary sources and looking at a deep historical case study, engaging students in really powerful stories like the Little Rock Nine or stories of rescue and resistance during the Holocaust, stories that they're really engaged with and that they find relevant to them enough to really look at the evidence in a way that they can construct an argument that they care about.
So that when events like Ferguson happen, we can help students avoid a rush to judgment. And
yeah, I think in the classroom, at least is kind of how I approach it, and what Facing History also allows with their resources is you're actually showing them how to have a dialogue first, which, whether they know it or not, then helps further their argument because you get to see and play with the ideas rather than focus on, you know, winning or beating a person's other argument. And so when you approach it as a dialogue, you lose that tension of debate and we're just exploring, and which allows for the synthesis and all the analysis, and which then can go into more of a formal assessment. Would that be the right mm-hmm. word for an argumentative paper, let's say? So what we do is we start off with the positions, the dialogue of what occurred and what are the sides and what are the perspectives and contexts, and that's the framework for thinking then can be used to ultimately pass a test.
Well, we have to draw this discussion to a close. That's it for Local Talk, and thank you so much, Jeremy Nassoff from Facing History
thank
and
you
ourselves.
Very much.
Here from Brookline, Massachusetts for the week, instructing Ames teachers and students at the School of Education. We have Chad Smolik from Ames High. And
thank you.
Thank you very much. And Katie Bruna. Thank you. Be sure to check out the website at facinghistory.org to see the wonderful work that Facing History is doing and see what your high school children are doing or grandchildren. We'll have a link to it on the KHOI website. We have been, Gail Seiler and Greta Anderson have been your hosts. Our theme song is Backtracking from Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Teach Your Children by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, and find today's show on the homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of past Local Talk shows. Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people.
speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.